Welcome to The Unconventional Path, entrepreneurship and innovation stories and ideas. Hello, I'm Bala Musitz.
And I'm Mike Wasserman.
Today, we are joined by Eric Reed. Eric is the founder and CEO of Reed 5 Group. His company works with client organizations to improve performance through better understanding of organizational dynamics, leadership, and culture.
Okay, Bala, this sounds interesting. Let's give it a listen.
Hello, listeners. Today, I'm here with Eric Reed. Eric is the founder of Reed 5 Group, where they work with entrepreneurs and they help entrepreneurs grow their business. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you, Bala. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, sure. So let me ask you my favorite question.
Okay.
So if you're at a social event, not a business social event, but sort of a normal social event.
Sure.
And you get introduced to somebody and they say, gee, Eric, can you tell me what you do? How do you answer that question?
It's funny. I'm glad you asked that. My simple answer is I help businesses simplify, clarify, and achieve their vision. That might seem like a quick kind of cop-out answer because, you know, what the heck does that mean? So that's my quick answer. And then generally there's it's something about vision or clarify, simplify. So the reality is in my business, companies very seldom are companies all on the same page with the vision. And so what I do, how I would answer that question is I help companies clarify, simplify, and achieve their vision, whether that's through marketing, whether that's organizational leadership, et cetera.
Got it. And so where did you get your start, Eric?
Well, I got into media in what was called, it's gone now because of the digital age, but it was the alternative industry. So, Detroit Metro Times, Village Voice out of New York, these are typical what are called alt weeklies. So, I started in the media game, running sales teams, building sales teams, back when the alternative industry was kind of booming. And we found ourselves with a lot of very talented people who maybe were looking for not so corporate culture, to satisfy their career desires. So I got into media with the alternative, industry with lifestyle publications, etc.
Oh, very nice. So you brought up sales teams, and I'd like to dive into that a little bit. I think one of the challenges that entrepreneurs have, particularly if they don't have a sales background, right? They might be a technology person or they just have an idea for something. And then building out the sales team is really, really critical because as we all know, without sales, there is no business.
Right. So goes sales, so goes the business,
yeah.
Right?
So how do you work with companies and what sort of advice do you give them in sort of, let's say day one, right? I don't have a sales guy, right? I finally got my product figured out. Now I'm ready to go find a salesperson to help me, to help lead the sales effort. And how do we solve that problem?
Well, so first of all, let me just go back briefly. When I got my start in the alternative industry, that whole culture was a different way of selling. It was built around community involvement. It was built around a lot of things that that I found culturally appealing. And I realized that what we were seeing in that industry was just how important culture is to the end game of achieving sales and building teams. I was in the alt industry for a while. I did some startups. I was in big media with Gannett and USA Today, running teams, et cetera. And so, to answer your question, when I left there and started to advise companies on building sales teams, the number one thing it comes back to is people and culture. So everybody wants to have a sales team that has five of this person or six of that person. And it's easy to fall into that because you want numbers, but numbers are very short. I don't want to say short-sighted, but they're short-lived. The culture and the system is what drives building a team, particularly a world-class sales team. So, the thing that I would say, let's go back to that dinner party, if you will, and somebody asked me what I do, and we got into talking about a sales organization, you know, I would start to talk about culture. I would start to talk about, you know, is there a clear vision? Do your, you know, I know you want people to sell, but do they know what their comp plan is? Do they know what the end game is? Do they know what success looks like? And if we don't know the answers to those, then we can't even start the journey of building a sales team that's going to be world-class or effective.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. So when you talk about culture, there's two things that come to my mind. There's sort of the internal culture of the business, right? The the culture the employees experience, right? The culture the sales team experiences. And then there's sort of the external culture the business has, right? The sort of, and that's part of the brand. It's sort of what customers perceive as the persona or the culture of this business. Are you talking about both of those or one of them, or help me understand that a little bit?
Well, I think it's a great differentiation that you bring up there. I think both are important. What I'm talking about is the culture, the environment that you create for internal marketing, if you will, for internal thriving of your sales department. I think the external is equally as important, and they would tie together because you've got to connect in that internal culture to the external. But I'm talking specifically of a culture that is not about, I mean, you know, you hear lead with fear, you know, inspire with fear, you lead with fear, you know, all these things build upon each other. So when I'm talking about culture, I'm talking about what the air smells like, what the air feels like when you walk into that building and you sit down at your desk or stand up at your, you know, raised desk these days or work from home. You've got to create that culture over how we're doing, you know, not necessarily sitting in front of each other, but using modern technology. So I'm talking about that kind of culture.
So what sort of specific steps can I, as a founder or an entrepreneur, take to lead me down that path? And what things would you specifically help me with to do that?
Well, what I find most often is that, and this isn't to point a finger at anybody, but it starts with leadership. And whether that's leadership at the top or leadership of the sales department, we talk about a winning team, a winning culture, you know, a world-class sales team is the phrase that's thrown out a lot, but you cannot have that without world-class leadership or the person who's responsible for creating that culture. So I would say, you know, when we say culture, we think about probably globally, we think about worldwide culture. You know, it takes a village to raise a child, all these different things we hear about different cultures. What I'm talking about is the culture of what success looks like, what my compensation is, what, you know, are we selling at all costs, or are we trying to develop me as an individual? You know, are we treating everybody the same? I know, you know, it's funny when I talk about this with anybody, the dinner party or prospective client, is everybody knows these things. I mean, everybody, it's never like a light bulb where they say, boy, I wasn't aware of that. The light bulb is knowing it and executing on it seem to be two completely different things. And consistency falls off very quickly. So to answer your question directly, I would say, listen, the number one thing that you can do to impact culture, obviously, people that you bring in will build that, but you've got to be consistent with whether it's meetings, individual meetings, team meetings. It's so important. Time is wasted, and it's not just your time that gets wasted. You know, you have people who look forward to that weekly meeting with their leader to talk about what's going on in their universe and their world and how can I get better and where do you think I can see improvement, et cetera. So to me, that would be number one. Is an air of consistency, et cetera. And then I always challenge people. Again, you know, there's something in a EOS system that we may or may not talk about, but it's an entrepreneurial operating system. And one of the key segments in there is data. And data we think of, you know, you hear data, you start to think, oh, 2.4 or click-through rate or this kind of stuff. But data really is saying that we're taking subjective out of the conversation. And we're looking at the data for who's doing their job the way that it should be to what the definition of the culture is or the vision of the company. So I would ask people to say the number one thing you can do on culture is it's take a hard look at who you have in place now. Doesn't mean we get rid of them. I'm not suggesting we go in and we clean house, but are they the right person for the job you're asking them to do? And is there somebody on the sales team that you think is the top sales rep that is putting the same, the biggest number up there, we can be blinded by the number. There oftentimes are many things that are not being consistent in the treatment of that individual for others. And so sometimes we cater to the one superstar and we find that we're really hurting the foundational relationship with the 500 or 600, maybe 5 or 6, you know, under 10, you know, small number, depending on the size of your organization. But culture is defined by consistency and equal treatment and a very clear understanding of what the playing field looks like.
So from a founder's perspective, what are the tools that I can use to help communicate that culture on a consistent manner?
Well, I think the number one tool mechanism and I'm going to use an example of a media sales company. Let's say there's like a size of like 15 reps, maybe a peer group leader or a peer manager, and then the manager of that department. I think the number one thing is having a system that's very transparent of where you're at within the structure of the team. And what I mean by that is if you're guessing, I mean, the worst thing that you can do on a daily basis, and keep me on check here, because I like to talk philosophy and I'm a people person. So the real tangible things are people want to know exactly where they stand. They want to know if they're doing a good job. They want to know if I think I'm doing a good job, but maybe it's, the thought is I'm not doing a good job. So I think the tools that we can use, obviously our CRM tools, there's something that we use that we implemented. We called it STP back in the Nuvo was the business in Indianapolis that I started in sales and marketing running teams. And we created this thing called STP, and it was a system that showed us if $100,000 was the revenue that we sold in 1 month, and we had 5 reps, in a perfect world, we would want each of the 5 reps to sell $20,000. But that doesn't always happen. So we would have one that would sell $30,000, one that was developing that would sell $5,000. And what we started to understand is what makes up that number? How many calls did they make? What was their closing percentage? And because when you have the individual meetings with these reps, that's their moment that week to talk to you and let you know how their business is going. What we found is that if we let them know that you're doing great here, you make a lot of phone calls, but your closing percentage is low, that's okay. I'm not going to beat you up for that. If we know it's low, you just got to make more phone calls. And so, and again, a lot of this stuff sounds obvious, but the data will show us what somebody has to do. So how do you create the culture? We talked about that. What's a tool that you could use? It's a reporting that's used in those weekly reports that everybody comes out of those meetings. They've went through the same process, so they really feel like they're part of that team.
Yes.
Culturally, they're equal.
Yes, yes. Very nice. So one of the things I hear you saying is that, consistency in communicating the culture is one very key element. Another one is this notion of having metrics and, mm-hmm. and measures and collecting the data and then sharing that data, right?
Right.
And then just by the mere fact of the metrics that you pick, that in itself communicates a very strong message, as to what's important.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because if you say number of calls is the most important thing, then that's going to drive behavior a certain way. So whatever you pick as the top 5 metrics you're going to measure or whatever you're going to measure, you have to remember that there's sometimes unintended consequences of picking those. Sure. There's intended consequences and there may be unintended consequences because it drives behavior.
Yeah, I think there's two. I mean, I love that you said that. There's two things that makes me think of. The first is, if we set one measurement that's important, not everybody's as good. This is the mistake that people make, in my opinion, that I see, and they're not mistakes that can't be corrected. Not everybody's the same, and so if we measure everybody on the same metric, then frustration. Then, you can have a good month if you're measuring sales in a monthly cycle, and then you can have a not so good month. So what are we understanding from month to month? And to your point on the metrics where that STP system was, we start to understand that, hey, Mike, you're good at cold calling. you make a whole heck of a lot of cold calls. In fact, 50% more than anybody else does on the team. Your closing percentage is low, but your revenue is equal with everybody else. So do I sit there and spend my, this talks about building a world-class sales team. Do I take the time to say, to mess with that and say, well, I want you to get your closing percentage higher? I mean, you could. I would say that's a waste of time. I would say, look, we were already identifying what your skill sets are. You want to grow, and maybe you want to provide for your family more, personal, whatever your goals are. How do you get more sales? Well, it looks like to me through this system, you just got to make more phone calls. We can work together if you want to set up some personal goals on, so you know that you're valued, how to close more. Maybe that'll help you too. But we focus on the things that we identify that people are strong at and what their strengths are, because as people, we feel good when we're recognized for what we do well.
Yeah, yeah. Now, early in our conversation here, you brought up this notion of EOS, which stands for Entrepreneurial Operating System.
Yeah.
Can you peel that back a little bit for us and explain what that is?
Sure. So EOS is, you know, the language of EOS is to clarify, simplify, and achieve your vision. EOS is a system of, and there's many systems out there, but EOS is one that was written by Gino Wickham, and it's about focusing on really six components of your business, which are vision, people, data, issues, process, and traction. Those are identified as six key businesses or six key segments within any business that would I don't know if you can hear that noise coming through, so I apologize. So
no, that's all right. It's background noise. Oh, we get it.
All right. I think my daughter's making an espresso. But anyway, we have those six elements that we focus on for individual companies' business. And the whole idea of EOS is to get of those six components of the business, we're looking for three things. We're looking for vision, we're looking for traction, and we're looking for a company to be healthy. So vision is everyone must be on the same page. If we were to go into any company and ask multiple employees what their mission statement is or what the vision, you would not get the same answers. As you know, it would be a rare situation where everybody states that. And if we're not leading out of the same playbook, so to speak, that's a problem. And traction then is the discipline and the accountability that goes into really the execution of understanding what those things are. And then healthy is when your leadership team is on the same page. So, of course, EOS is about the whole health of the organization, but it starts at the top in the executive level with the executive leadership team of everybody getting on the same page and then rolling it out through the rest of the company. And when you do that, everybody has the same vision, and that goes into hiring people, et cetera, that are, you know, culturally a fit. Everybody, you know, we're looking at data to see if we've got the right person in the wrong chair or the wrong person in the right chair, maybe a great employee, but maybe not the right job for them. And we look at the issues and how to solve those. And there's specific processes we put in place. And then at the end of the day, there's something called traction, which when the business is really starting to say, wow, I didn't know this could happen. So EOS is a system that helps businesses get off of that flat plateau that they're at. Doesn't have to be a bad business. It doesn't mean that things aren't bad. It just means they've reached a point that they want more. And when we are ready to admit that we might want that and we start to peel back some of the layers, we start to find that it's okay. We're people. It's not fun to have a conversation with somebody who you want more out of. Some people are challenged with that. But if we let that stuff go unattended, it causes you sleepless nights as the business owner. It can erode the culture within the organization. So very important elements to focus on when looking at the health of your company. So that's what EOS is. It's a open up the hood and lead the executive leadership team on some proven tools to grow their business in efficiency and clarity.
Yeah, that's very helpful. And who did you say developed this EOS?
Well, it's Gino Wickham. It's a book called Traction that was written a while ago. And many companies, I do like to say this, I have companies that I deal with that I help them with, but that book, Traction by Gino Wickham, it's for, you don't need me or anybody else to implement EOS to do it. It, you can self-implement it. It's designed for self-implementation. The problem is potentially that if you're not going to do it with the discipline, it's sometimes it's easier to bring somebody in to help you lead that with your organization.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what I do. So
yeah, sometimes it's really important to have a independent third party, if you will, kind of do these things, because it makes people relax in a certain way that they don't relax if the boss is running it.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's a great observation that we say that almost in the meetings. It allows people to be a little bit more open because, again, we talk about culture, we talk about people. That puts everybody in the same kind of scope of the audience and so forth. So it's not consulting. You didn't ask that. I'm only throwing that out there because consulting is my experience with consulting and I have no issue with it, but there's a lot more ownership and risk on EOS. It's really roll up your sleeves and get involved. So the EOS is about leading a company through it, not advising them on what to do. So a little bit of a difference.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, I will make sure to put Gene Wickham's book Traction into the show notes and where people can get that.
So that's great.
Well, I was reading over some of the information you sent me. One of the things in there caught my eye, and that is that you feel that asking prospective employees about their relevant skill set in sort of a job interview is a waste of time. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. I'm glad that you asked me about that. So here's the thing. I think just for a little point of clarity there, I think it's okay to get into a conversation if there's experience in the area. I mean, you're not going to hire somebody as your CFO if they've never, done accounting.
Yeah, they have to have a baseline set of skills. Right. Yeah.
Correct. So it's fair to go there. Here's what I'm saying about that. It doesn't matter how skilled the person is if they're not a cultural fit with your organization. It's going to be a problem. 1 week in, 1 year in, 6 months in, cultural fit is where I hang my hat. So when looking at salespeople, and if they come in for a job interview, I'll use this example on salespeople, is hopefully they're going to interview well because they're a salesperson. So the skill sets that they have in being able to sell, to generate leads, to know when it's time to close, all the things that we would ask a salesperson, their skill sets or their abilities, if you will, in those areas, and maybe give me some examples of it. To me, that's a waste of time because I don't really care what the answers to those questions are. I don't, because A, this isn't the company you were at first. Second, our system is not the system that you're coming from. So those two things alone really are going to change the whole complexion of what skill set you have. All I want to know is, will you fit in with my system, our company's system? Will you be a cultural fit? Are you going to disrupt things? Because I would rather have somebody who is a cultural fit and can develop on the team and understand what we're doing and shows up with the right energy on a daily basis, as opposed to, a rock star. I think I've interviewed plenty of sales reps and they always lead with, and I get it, I've closed this much business, I've closed that. I kind of like to go, I do like sports, but I do use the examples of sports dynasties, if you will. Because those systems are what wins. I mean, the New England Patriots, love them or hate them, they win. A little more challenging without Tom Brady, I get that. But the system is, superstars, non-superstars have come into that system and become superstars. Superstars have gone into that system and been sent on their way 6 weeks in. So it's about a cultural fit. I mean, sports know it. The arts groups knows it. Every industry knows it. But we seem to focus on that in sales and marketing on skill sets as opposed to culture. And that's what I mean by that. I think it's a complete waste of time.
Got it. Got it. That's great advice. So, Eric, we've been at this over 20 minutes now, so I want to wrap up. Is there anything that I have not asked you that I should have?
Well, I suppose there's probably plenty of things that you should ask me, but I won't say that you could have asked me that. I would say that you should have. I would just say that in a lot of the stuff I've talked about today, it's easy for me to sit here and say, oh, they got to be a cultural fit. Well, how do you know if they're a cultural fit? It's easy for me to say, well, they've got to create the culture. They've got to have meetings on time. Okay, great. I get that. I read that. Everybody's telling me that, but I'm still struggling. How do I make that fix, or what are things that I would do? So I would say this, when you're looking for, so the question would be, hey, Eric, hey, that's great, cultural fit over experience, but what's an indicator of a cultural fit? Well, you still would ask the same type of questions to put somebody in a scenario of, you know, what, how they respond to a certain situation. You know, I would ask a direct question. This would actually be somebody perhaps who might be interviewing for a job to understand what the culture is. And then the reciprocal of that would work the other way. You know, you should ask somebody because it's equally important for you to be a cultural fit. You won't be successful if you're not a cultural fit, but you should ask somebody who's the model employee on your team. And we don't really care who it is. The follow-up question, what we care about, why is that the model employee? Well, oh, it's Jen. She's amazing. She works 70 hours a week. She puts her family off all the time for everything. So, you know, and then you're thinking, well, that's not me. And so, which is nothing wrong with that. I would say we should help Jen dedicate more time to her family. But my point is, if you're not going to fit in that culture, it's best to know it there. And so the reciprocal of that would be, you should paint the picture of not, hey, how would you sell this? Sell me this pen. Or how would you, you know, can you collaborate? Can you go in and do that? The question would be, this is how we operate on a weekly basis. We do this, we do that, we do this. You know, how does that fit in with who you are? Because, and it's, you know, just like, you always take a little bit of risk when hiring somebody. It's a lot of gut feel, right? You never know if they're really what they turned out to be. You try to, it's the challenge. But I think if you live in the cultural side, even try it in your next interview, you'll find that the answers that are coming from people from the culture side are less rehearsed, really haven't prepared for them. So really, by answering those questions, aren't you asking a sales rep or a marketing person something you really want to know? And that is how they respond to to something they weren't prepared for.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good advice. You know, everybody talks about culture. Very right. Few people actually do something about it.
I agree.
And I think that as I reflect back on people I've met in the past who have built fabulous businesses, and I mean fabulous from all perspectives, really spent a lot of time, and they really focused a lot on culture, and they were consistent about it. They were definitive about it, right? They decided this is the type of culture we're going to have, and they were clear about it. And then your employees sort of self-sort, right?
Yeah.
The ones that fit stay, and the ones that don't fit don't stay. And that's okay.
That is okay.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Right.
We don't like it, but it has to happen. It's the process.
It's the process. That's right. That's right. Hey, Eric, you've been a wonderful guest. Thank you very much for being on the show. Yeah. You've shared some really good things with our listeners. And again, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Bella. I appreciate it. Take care.
This was an interesting interview, Bela. Eric had a lot of insights on how to improve the performance of organizations through creating a set of processes. And I'm a process guy, so I love this. And systems that focus on culture, leadership, organizational dynamics. When you were a VC, how many startups that you saw needed help in these aspects of growing a young business? So are these concepts that Eric was talking about needed by typical startups?
Yeah, you see it a lot, actually, in startups. And you see two things. You see the lack of processes for doing things, and you see the lack of key performance indicators, or KPIs, as sometimes they're called. Although KPIs have gotten very in the last 10 years or so, and everybody talks about them. But I like to contrast sort of, you know, parts of my career when I worked in large corporations, when I worked at General Electric and I worked at IBM. They had processes for everything. And it was really great because you sort of knew how to get things done. It may have been a long road to get things done, but there were steps laid out, and it gave people a way to engage and it gave people a way to sort of interact. And you know, this is how you purchase something. This is how you submit an expense report. This is how you sort of get a project approved. This is how you get a budget approved. All those things were well established. In small companies, they're not, because it's two or three people that get together and start a business. And, you know, when it's just two or three of them, it works great because they all sit around the lunchroom, or they all sit around their desk and they chit chat because they're all in the same room. And it's easy to kind of get that stuff going. And you really see the sort of company struggle as they grow, as they start adding people to the organization. And then these new people come in and everything is sort of done in an unwritten way, right? There is no process for, well, how do I need to buy something. I need to buy a piece of equipment or a piece of software, or I need to get a budget approved. And there aren't processes for that. And so a lot of companies struggle with that. So I think that's really important. That's a key important aspect to think about. Maybe not on day one, but there's nothing wrong with thinking about it on day one. But certainly by the time you start growing your business, you have to start thinking about putting some rules of engagement, I like to call them, in place, so people understand how to interact. And I think that it becomes more and more important the bigger you are. And, you know, there's some individuals that work really well when there are no sort of boundary conditions, and they're doers, and they just grab the ball and they run with it, and they run with it in the right direction. But there's other people who are not going to grab the ball until they know how you're supposed to grab the ball, how you're supposed to hold it, and the direction you're supposed to run in. So in a young company, you got to get the right balance, and striking the right balance there, because you don't want to burden the organization with rules and procedures, et cetera. But at the same time, you want to make sure that people are efficiently working and effectively producing things that your business produces. What do you think, Mike?
Agree, Bela. And in my kind of experiences in working in startups, it's really been finding that balance between consistency, right? So that every time we interact with a customer, or every time we onboard a new employee, there's certain things that we're doing every time the same way. And that consistency is really critical for quality. But on the other hand, as you said, you don't want to have everything over scripted so that you don't give people the freedom to have new ideas and to innovate and to take some risks. So to me, that's why maybe having somebody like Eric to bounce these things off of, to develop your own system that fits your own kind of business, your own model, where you can have, here's what needs to be consistent, here's what we want to do every time. Because, you know, this idea of scaling, right, of growing your business by adding more employees or adding more products or adding more customers, it's only going to work if you can deliver a great experience to your customer every time. The enemy of growth, right, is unhappy customers. Because if that goes viral, you're sunk, and all the investments you made are sunk. So if you're investing in advertising, or you're investing in salespeople, or you're investing in new product lines, you sure as heck better be investing in processes to make sure that your people are all making consistent decisions and know what to do so that they can support that growth, or really drive that growth through doing the right things every time. But don't sit on their creativity, right? And don't keep them from taking some risks. So it really is figuring out what parts of your business need processes that are consistently followed, and where do you want to let people be creative and be themselves, and figuring that out is going to be a key. But knowing those areas that you do want consistency, and then knowing how to make processes, that can make a huge difference.
Yeah, it's a good point, Mike, and I think related to this is sort of key performance indicators, or KPIs as they're called, or what you measure. Right. And as an organization, what you measure drives performance. So, you know, Eric talked about this a little bit, where if you have a salesperson whose closing rate is low, but they make a lot of calls, right, that's okay. Versus a person who maybe has a higher closing rate, but makes fewer calls per day. So don't try to drive one person one way or the other. Right. Make sure your things that you measure allow people to work within the things that work for them, but at the same time, help move your company forward in a direction that's important. Don't handcuff people with your performance measures or your processes, right? Don't put handcuffs on them.
Yeah, some people almost pick these KPIs almost randomly because they read about them somewhere or they saw them somewhere and they don't fit the business outcomes. You really have to know, what do we want? And you're only going to know that, you know, your own financials, but what makes your customers happy, right?
Right.
And so if you understand that, then you can start to use the right KPIs. And I'm a big fan of multiple KPIs, and you kind of were leaning in this direction, and I'm going to push it a little harder, because if you say, oh, let's keep things simple, let's only have one or two KPIs, and I've seen companies make these mistakes, you're only going to get a narrow range of what's important. You're going to miss aspects of success, right? Strong performance isn't usually just one or two things. It's usually a blend of things. And not everybody needs to be great on all the KPIs, but you need to cover them somehow amongst your teams and amongst your people. So I do think a range of KPIs is good, and even having a couple different ways to measure success for each dimension of your business can be really helpful. And then over time, you fine-tune them, right? And then you can narrow them down. But start broad and be open. And again, this is where somebody can come in and help you look from the outside, and who knows best practice can come in and say, yeah, maybe you should think about these as some KPIs. This matches what your business model is, and this matches what your objectives are and the type of business that you're in. So, you know, it's too many times, and there's lots of these standard KPIs that don't fit. So I've seen a lot of companies have success with tweaking the KPIs and tweaking the set of KPIs they use, so it really aligns with what they're trying to do.
Yeah, yeah. You bring up a good point in the notion of, you know, the KPIs for the manufacturing division should be and probably are different than the KPIs for sales and marketing.
Absolutely.
Right? But both of those KPIs ought to support the KPIs for the mother organization, right? For the overall organization. So they sort of have to nest, and they sort of have to support each other, but for different parts of the business, for different individuals, they can be very different. It's not like there's only three. Here's the three for the whole company, and that's all that matters.
Yep.
Right? Now, maybe when there's just four or five of you, that makes a lot of sense. But when there's 300 of you, that probably doesn't make a lot of sense. So yep. You got to think about this, and KPIs also change with time. They're not like the Ten Commandments, right? They change with time. They change as the organization grows. They change as your customers grow and change. Your KPIs are going to evolve, and let them evolve. Don't necessarily say these are cast in stone and these are the only ones forever, because it can drive you to places where you don't want to go. And also think through, oftentimes when you start measuring stuff, they're going to have unintended consequences. They're going to drive behavior a certain way that may not be the way you want to drive it. So that's another reason you got to sort of have KPIs on the KPIs. You know, are they doing the things you want them to do? Because if they're not, you got to tweak them.
And it's also where ethics comes into play, Bela, because if you're incentivizing people based on your KPIs, and now people are incentivized to do things that might not be ethical, this is how problems start. So, you know, we started off, and I agree, having some KPIs are good, but you also have to be really careful that if the tail is wagging the dog, right, that you set these KPIs and that drives the decision making. And mission, vision, and values are always important, and knowing your customers are always important, and the KPI should be secondary at the end of the day. I think they can support great decision and great leadership, but they shouldn't necessarily drive it. And if somebody comes in and tells you, here's the 12 measures you need, and if you hit all 12 of these, you're going to have a successful business, I'd be scared of that.
Right, right. They should be there to help you evaluate how you're doing. They should not be there to tell you what to do.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
Great. Well, what do you think? Should we wrap it up?
I think so.
Excellent. Listeners, thanks for joining us today. We hope you found this episode interesting and thought-provoking. If you have questions about what we discussed, please feel free to get in touch with us. Our email is bela.ann.mike@gmail.com.
Hey, and please do subscribe, if you haven't already, to the podcast. And better yet, tell your friends about it. So until next time, signing off from upstate New York. See you soon, Mike.
Thanks, Bela. From over here in Münster, Germany, auf Wiedersehen.